Okay, here we are.
Hello.
Hello, friends.
It's us.
We're back.
Who else would it be?
It's Kat and Julie. It's us.
Come on now. We do. You know how this goes.
Who were you expecting? Cue to music.
Cue the music.
Wonderful. So here we are recording on my company's dime. I love that for us to talk about the second part of Robert Berdella's story.
Boom, boom, boom. And we're not going to go off on tangents this time.
I mean, we
we'll try not to, you know,
we'll try not to just because I have a meeting right after this. Which is fine. It's fine. Honestly,
I've got overtones sitting in my hair. It's
Kat's gonna have this beautiful, like rose gold tinted hair, and she's gonna look like a stunner.
She's just gonna kill it. She's that overtone for brown hair. I colored it last night, but I did not put enough on because
you gotta saturate.
We're saturating this shit right now.
Yes. Watch a Brad Mondo video. Yes. That's his whole thing. He's all like, you gotta saturate your hair. So Overtone, sponsor us.
Please.
Please.
I'm sitting here in my hair dye shirt, all looking
looking beautiful.
A little rose,
like a
gold
flamingo.
Flamingo thing.
Love it.
Yes.
Love that. Yes. So let's hop into Robert Berdella's five next murders. Because if you remember, we talked about his background and his first murder during the first episode. And now he killed six people in total that we know of.
That we know of, yes.
Which I will explain a little bit later on why we're not sure that it's only six. But he only confessed to six. So he was only convicted of six. Anyway, part two, Robert Berdella.
Let's go.
Here we go. If you need a little refresher, go back and listen to part one. But at the end of part one, Robert killed Jerry Howell, who was the son of one of his friends.
Yes.
Who worked at the flea market.
The bazaar.
The bazaar of bazaars.
Yes.
So, Robert's next victim is a 23-year-old named Robert Sheldon. Robert, meet Robert. So, I will be referring to Robert Sheldon as Sheldon.
Yes.
By his last name, just to not confuse myself. Similarly to Robert Berdella's first victim, Sheldon had previously stayed with Berdella. Like at his house, like Robert.
Part of his boarding situation he had out of the charity of his heart.
Right. So on April 10th of 1985, Sheldon came knocking on Berdella's door to ask him if he could stay with him for some time, you know.
Yeah.
Robert agreed to let Sheldon stay with him. And Sheldon was a very responsible tenant and actually paid his rent on time. He was able to pay his rent.
Okay, good for him.
And Robert acknowledged that. He was like, yeah, he was a great tenant, but he was an inconvenience because Robert wasn't sexually attracted to him.
What?
So there was nothing else that Sheldon could do for him. So he decided to drug and hold him captive on April 12th.
A perfectly logical solution.
Yeah. You know, and Berdella would later tell the police that he didn't hold any malice towards Sheldon.
He just wasn't hot.
He didn't actually want to hurt him, like, intentionally.
Oh, my God.
But he just needed someone to express some of the anger and frustration that I had towards people.
So this guy that's not attracted to me, best use of that.
Yes. He has one function, and that is just to get my anger out on. Oh my God, that was really hot.
Oh, your teeth.
Oh my god. Oh my god. You can't see me. I'm crying.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, that burned the back of my throat.
Oh.
Oh my god, that was such a mistake. I hate it here.
Oh.
Oh. Hold on. Oh god, I'm
Julie's tea almost killed her.
Almost died. Anyway. So. Yeah, so Robert just cared. Like, he didn't really care about this guy, just wanted to get his frustrations out on him. And he held him captive for 3 days. So, like, during this time, Robert put him through different types of physical, sexual, and mental torture.
Oh, and so he's documenting all of this.
Oh, yeah.
He's writing all of this down. Just as a
heads up, I may go, like, very briefly into some of the details. But I'm not going to go into anything too deep because I feel like this man was a fucking lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the first victim, he was only tortured for about 24 hours or 28 hours. And now Sheldon, it's 3 days. So he definitely does more types of torture on him, such as Robert swabbed drain cleaner on his eye.
What?
To make him blind. Or, like, he didn't fully make him blind
all but at enough once, but to, like,
slowly
disorient his vision.
Swab. Yeah.
Oh.
He inserted needles under his nails.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. No. No.
He tied up his wrists with, like, chicken wire.
Oh, my God.
With the purpose, like, he documented that the purpose of doing this was to permanently damage his nerve endings.
Oh, that is
sick. He wrote that shit down. And lastly, he would also fill his ears with caulk, like, to caulk bathrooms, like, tiles and stuff, to deafen him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's blinding him, depriving him of hearing, oh, my God, the nails under the fingers. Nails.
Yeah, that part's like,
I don't like that.
That part's bad.
Mm.
So remember that this started on April 12th, and Robert had forgotten that he had scheduled for some roofers to come by his house to do some work on his roof. So to avoid having to answer any difficult questions or having to deal with the difficulty of keeping Sheldon quiet.
Oh no.
He just decided it was easier to suffocate and strangle Sheldon than dissect and dispose of his body.
Oh.
Now we fast forward to June. Is that two months later?
Yeah, 2 months.
I know math. Dates, calendars,
numbers,
the Mayans. So yeah, in June of that year, Robert would find his third victim. This guy, Mark Wallace, had previously done yard work for Robert Berdella. And one afternoon, it was like really thunderstorming outside. It was really bad. And Robert notices that Wallace is seeking shelter in his tool shed from the storm outside.
Yeah.
So Robert goes up to him and invites him into the house for shelter, you know, his whole Jesus act.
Yep.
And he noticed that poor Mark, he was tense. He was experiencing depression.
Oh, no.
He was having a rough go at life. So naturally, Robert takes advantage of this and offers to inject Wallace with some chlorpromazine.
Oh.
Just a little bit to help him.
Just relax. A little. We've had this revelation in the tool shed. Let's take the edge off.
Yeah. But obviously he gave him more than just a little bit to help him relax. And 30 minutes later, that's when Robert actually decided that he was going to kidnap this man.
It just the next logical step.
It's the next logical step. He could have just let him rest.
Sleep it off.
No. 30 minutes in and he was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to take advantage of this.
This is the time.
So Berdella took Wallace up to the bedroom that's on the second floor of his house, which becomes like the spot where he keeps like his victims. And some of the torture this time around included attaching alligator clips to his nipples.
Oh.
And running electrical shocks to his body.
Oh.
Yeah, he would run these electrical shocks for like 5 minutes at a time.
Oh, no.
Until like the victim was almost like not able to be like conscious for more than 5 to 10 seconds at a time.
Oh,
and
my
that's
God.
When he would finally stop. So another thing that he like started to do was he started to experiment with hypodermic needles.
Oh.
So he started to inject various drugs into the different muscles of Mark Wallace's back using these hypodermic needles. And this time around, Wallace didn't even survive a full day of torture.
Oh my God.
Before dying on June 23rd at 7 p.m. And why do we know the exact time of his death?
He wrote it down.
He wrote it down in one of his many, many detailed logs, which the photos are up on Instagram if y'all haven't seen it.
That's just like one section.
It's just I think it's just like his living room or something.
Yeah, it's just his living room, and that's like a fraction of it.
Yeah, and it's filled to the brim with papers. So now his fourth murder. This fourth murder is when things take kind of more of a turn. They escalate even more than they already have, if that's even possible.
But Robert found a way.
Oh, yeah. So later in his interview with the police, Robert explained to them that, you know, even though he subjected his first three victims to cruel torture, he didn't really, like, intend to do that. But
it just
this fourth victim, yeah, it just kind of happened
in the moment.
Like, didn't mean to torture you. I got taken away with the moment. Yeah, but this guy, this victim was the first victim where he intentionally wanted to inflict torture.
Oh,
so on September 26th of 1985, James Ferris, who was an old acquaintance of Robert's. Yet again. So clearly Robert's good deeds from some time ago for these young men was never really beneficial for them in the end.
No.
So James asked Robert if he could crash at his place for some time. And Berdella later admitted that he agreed to let him stay with the specific intention of kidnapping James. Whereas like the others, it was like, yeah, I'm going to let you live with them. And then like, if I feel like it, maybe I'll kidnap you.
What kind of
mood am I in
today?
But this time it was like, I'm going to let you live here because I'm going to kidnap you. So that night of September 26th, the two men decided to meet up at a bar, have some drinks, and then go back to Berdella's place. So once they're there, Berdella drugs his food with tranquilizers.
Oh, yeah.
And takes him up to the second story bedroom and ties him to the bed. He tortured him constantly for the next 27 hours.
Oh, God.
And in this time period, Berdella, like I said, was experimenting with electrical shocks. But this time, he was administering 7,700 volts of electricity to Ferris's shoulders and testicles. He also continued to inject him with hypodermic needles in his neck and genitals, and pretty much just continued to physically and sexually assault him until he could no longer sit up for more than 10 to 15 seconds at a time.
Oh my God.
All of this was documented in Berdella's notes. Like Berdella specifically said, like running experiments almost. Like, oh, this time after I shocked him, he was able to sit up for 30 seconds.
Oh my God. No. The poor investigators that had to read all of that.
Dude.
Holy shit. Like, oh my God, I can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm. And so after writing down all the details of the torture about how he was no longer able to sit up for more than 10 to 15 seconds at a time, Berdella's next entry wrote that James was experiencing very delayed breathing.
Oh, that's not good.
His next entry was saying very casually that Ferris was 86, which I had to look up what that meant. And apparently it's like a chef term because he was a chef.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's a term that chefs or people in the kitchen use to say that like an ingredient or a dish is no longer available. Like, oh yeah, he's 86. Like he's gone. He's out. He's no longer available. He's no longer on the menu.
Oh.
Which like, how do you, like, you just killed someone and like, that's so like such a fucking casual way to put it.
It is.
Yeah. So fucking crazy.
Fucking absolutely fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Now from September, the rest of that year and on to June of the next year, Robert has no known victims until June 17th of 1986, when Berdella runs into his old buddy, Todd Stoops, at Liberty Memorial Park. Todd, once again, was a drug addict and sex worker who briefly lived with Berdella for a couple years. Mm-hmm. And being the savior that Robert is, he invites Todd back to his house, offers him some lunch, some sex, and $13 so that Todd could buy some more drugs, which I looked it up and that's about $30 in today's money, which like, damn, that's some cheap drugs.
That
not that I
not that we are know. Familiar with the drug market.
I would like to make it very clear that I do not dabble in hard drugs.
We didn't know.
So like, you know, Berdella's been known to do now, he crushed up some tranquilizers and put it in to Todd's food and drugs him. And this time he holds Todd captive for almost 2 weeks.
Oh shit.
So it's no longer a few days. So Berdella explained in his notes that he planned to keep him for like a longer period of time this time around. So he gradually increased the amount of torture that Todd was going through.
Just so that he could survive those 2 weeks.
Yeah. One, to survive, but also to keep him cooperative and incapacitated. So like just enough. Oh,
just enough just to enough. Keep him from trying anything.
Right. Then on June 27th, like into the second week of Todd being held captive, Berdella, okay, like trigger warning for real. Berdella ruptured Todd's anal wall.
Holy shit.
With his fist, which caused mass bleeding.
Oh.
And after that, Todd became like really weak and he like pretty much didn't bounce back.
Yeah.
Berdella tried to like force feed him like soup and ice cream.
That's,
for whatever reason.
Ice cream fixes anything.
Yeah. But at that point, like it was way too late. Todd couldn't hold anything down. Yeah.
And then like a few days later, blood loss too.
Dude, like ruptured that shit. So, a few days later on July 1st, Todd Stoops died. And later a forensic pathologist determined that the ruptured anal wall caused like septic shock within his whole body. Oh. And that's what killed him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got the anal things all up in your, mm-hmm. your gut things. And it's just, they don't like that.
No.
It's not good. Septic shock. Not good.
Very bad. Very, very bad.
Sorry, didn't mean to laugh. That was nervous laughter.
Nervous laughter, yeah. Nervous. Julie's face is like, I have to read out these disturbing details.
See, I feel like I keep picking cases also that have lots of torture, and I don't mean to. Like, I'll just read like a quick little synopsis on the case. And I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then I get into it and it's like 5 articles later and it's 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm still reading about how this guy tortured these men and my brain's on 100 and I can't get to sleep and I'm doing a lot for you guys. Appreciate me. I will never be the same after this.
This is our moment to appreciate Julie.
Thank you. Yeah, so after Todd, almost a year goes by. And then in the spring of 1987, Robert becomes friends with a 20-year-old man named Larry Wayne Pearson. So at this point, Robert is 39 years old. He has no business being friends with a 20-year-old, like just casually.
Ew, no.
But yeah, so the two met when Pearson walked into BBB's.
Bob's Bazaar Bazaar.
Yes, and he told Robert that when he was a kid, he was like super interested in witchcraft and wizardry and the mystical shit.
Right. If it existed back then, he would have probably loved it.
He would have been a geek about it.
Yes.
And I guess like after this, they just like developed this weird friendship based on this kind of like interest in the occult or whatever. And Larry eventually needed a place to stay.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. But Larry was only 20. He was having a rough go at it and couldn't afford to pay rent. So that allowed him to stay with him and not pay rent on the condition that he did chores around the house, like cleaning, cooking, mowing the lawn, all that good stuff. And things were going pretty smoothly for a while. You know, Berdella said he wasn't actually planning on kidnapping Larry at first.
Wow, you actually liked let him. Become,
yeah, he was like, you're a he cool was guy. Doing my chores. He was keeping my house clean. What was I going to kill him for? But it all changed.
Of course it did.
On one night when Larry was arrested. For robbing a gay man in a city nearby. So Berdella went and posted his bail and got him out of jail. And once he did that, Larry started joking about the fact that he was like making a habit of robbing these like gay men. Like these transient gay men at, you know, random places. And, you know, I'm not sure if it was like some weird version of Robert's moral compass that made him decide that this was unacceptable, or if it was like, nah, that's my gig. You can't do that.
You're stepping into my territory here.
These are my victims. That's my demographic. Like, so I'm not sure what did it, but Robert decided that Larry had to pay and decided that he would now become his 6th victim.
Bum, bum, bum.
So that night, Berdella gets Larry super drunk and injects him with chlorpromazine. And this time, Robert takes Larry down to the basement. Instead of the bedroom.
It's not going to go.
No.
Not going to go well.
It's an escalation.
It's a de-escalation in the house, but an escalation of the torture.
That's right. So when he's down there, Robert ties Larry's hands above his head and injects him in the throat with drain cleaner.
How did he survive that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I
really don't know.
I guess
I don't know if it was like just enough to like have him not yell or scream.
That's what I was like just speak. About to say. Like enough to like damage his vocal cords.
Yeah,
I don't know anatomy, but
yeah,
I guess that's what he was aiming for.
I don't know.
I don't like it.
I don't want to be in his mindset. I don't want to try to. to explain why he would do this. So apparently, according to Burdella, Larry was his most cooperative victim.
Oh.
Burdella bragged in his notes that by the fifth day of repeatedly electrocuting Larry and breaking several of his hand bones with an iron rod, Robert felt like he could trust Larry.
Oh.
He felt that Larry had been cooperative.
Is this like a weird rendition of Stockholm Syndrome?
Not really.
Okay.
I think Robert was just delusional. Like, yeah. Larry was just clearly, like, too weak.
Too weak to do anything to fight back. Like, you know, like, drain cleaner was injected into his throat.
Yeah, like, I am cooperative, meaning that I'm completely tied and consistently drugged or electroshocked. So, yeah, I'm not gonna, like, what?
Yeah, so, that's weird.
Once he felt that he could trust Larry, he moved him up to the second floor as a reward.
Wow.
He's just so generous.
He was such a good victim that he got to go upstairs.
Oh, yes. Robert also must have been in just like a particularly giving mood because he told Larry that if he continued to cooperate, he promised that he won't inflict as much pain on him as he had when he was in the basement.
Wow. The light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. It's not a very bright light, but no. At that point, you got to hold on to whatever you have.
Yeah.
So Larry trained himself to endure the abuse, pretty much. Like, he trained himself not to flinch, not to react, and to just, like, pretty much pretend that he was asleep while the abuse was happening.
Oh, my God.
And he endured this for almost 6 weeks.
Oh,
and into the sixth week of being captive, Larry could no longer take it.
Yeah, like you're just gonna break. Your body's gonna give out.
Yeah, so Larry was not gonna go out without a fight.
Good for him.
I fucks with that. Larry bit deeply, deeply into Burdella's penis.
Oh, shit.
And screamed with Burdella's penis in his mouth that he could not tolerate any more torture.
Ah!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, listen, at least he went out fighting.
He did. In a badass way.
In a badass way. But Burdella wasn't having it, obviously.
Yeah.
He proceeded to bludgeon Larry to death with a tree limb.
Holy shit.
I don't know where he got a tree limb. I don't know. I don't know why he just had it in the bedroom near the bed. I don't know.
I don't understand, but all right.
Yeah. And he also went overkill and suffocated him with a bag and a ligature, then dismembered his body and buried it in his backyard.
Oh.
And after that, this man's went to the hospital to save his penis.
Of course he did. And what did he tell the people when he got to the hospital?
He filed an assault report against Larry Pearson, saying that they were just having intercourse and he was giving him oral sex and just like went crazy and snapped and bit his penis. That's it. Yes. He made himself the victim.
He made himself the victim, but I wonder how law enforcement's going to look at that. Like, how are we going to question Larry?
Yeah.
Now you're going to have the police looking for Larry.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that was the sixth victim. The sixth death.
Known
that
victim.
Was committed. Sixth known victim. So now, for this last little bit, I want to preface it with a quote from Mr. Burdella himself.
Oh, what did Mr. Burdella have to say for himself?
Okay. Oh my God. It's honestly insane. He said, "You did not choose to be here, but you are. For you to survive being here and for you to, you know, make it, It could either be rough or it could be easy. If I grow to like you and to trust you, then I could do special things for you, such as buy you cigarettes, pick up a movie on the way home from work, and so forth. Don't try to fight me, or you'll just get more of what you had earlier. You see, what you got is nothing compared to what you can have.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So that was like in an interview that he gave, I'm pretty sure, after he was arrested.
That is terrifying.
Yeah. But before his arrest, we've got one final victim who makes it out.
Yes.
Okay, so the final victim, the final kidnapping victim.
Yes.
Was Christopher Bryson. Christopher was a 22-year-old prostitute that went to Berdella's home for work. You know, he was going to get a little sex work.
Get some sex work in for the day.
March 29th of 1988. But, of course, Berdella knocked Christopher out with that iron rod and tied him to his bed. Berdella performed similar types of torture as he had on his previous victims. Except this time he also, he like swapped out the drain cleaner for just straight up ammonia.
Oh!
And swapped that ammonia on Christopher's eyes.
Oh my God.
And Robert's reasoning for doing this is because the only things that Christopher needed to think about were you, me, and this house. How romantic.
That's how you set the mood, gentlemen.
Set the mood. You gotta blind your partners. So that way they're really only focusing on you. So after 3 days of keeping Christopher captive, Berdella told Christopher that he was beginning to trust him and that he would be willing to compromise on some of the abuse and torture.
Well, you've been so great. Let's just negotiate, you know, how we're just going to tone this down.
You know what wasn't on the table for negotiation?
Freedom.
That and the sexual abuse.
Oh.
The sexual abuse was not negotiable.
Oh.
As part of these negotiations, I guess, Christopher asked that instead of having his hands be tied up behind or above his head into the bed, that he preferred to have his hands tied in front of him.
Ooh, smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. Yeah.
My man's was thinking ahead. And he asked for the TV to be left turned on whenever Robert wasn't in the room with him. And to leave the remote with him, like, between his legs so that he could change the channel. And Berdella agreed, but made sure to warn him that I've gone this far with other people before, and they're dead now because of the mistakes they made.
Oh.
So he was like, don't get too cozy.
Don't get too comfortable.
Don't backstab me because you know what's in it for you.
I will literally stab you.
Yeah. So after this, the day after this, Berdella has to go to work at BBB's.
The Bazaar Bazaar.
The Bazaar Bazaar. And for as careful as Berdella had been about, like, torturing his victims, like, the routine of it and, like, the immaculate notes and all that, this man forgot a box of matches in the room where Christopher was being held captive. So now that Christopher wasn't tied to the bed, he got the box of matches and used it to burn through the rope that was restraining his hands.
Good for him.
He escaped by jumping out of the second story window wearing nothing but a dog collar.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the jump from that second story window ended up like breaking his foot. But he didn't let that slow him down.
He fucking ran.
Because he saw a man like across the street who was like a meter reader.
Mm-hmm. meter.
Like for like to check your gas meter or electrical meter or whatever. He saw him walking on the other side of the street and he just made a fucking run for it. Just shouting for this man to call the police.
Oh.
So luckily he got the meter reader's attention and he took Christopher to the house where he was walking to meter read.
Yeah, like it's going to be very hard not to notice a naked man running, screaming with a dog collar on.
Yeah. So they get Christopher safely inside and then they call the police, who arrived quickly, thankfully.
Yes.
So it was at this time that Christopher told the officers that he had been hitchhiking when Berdella picked him up. Because, you know, he wasn't trying to
rob. Yeah, he wasn't trying to say that he was doing the little doom-da-doom for money.
Right. Not that it's any other business.
No,
that's
it's not
what matters
it's not.
Here.
No.
He told the officers that after, or that, oh, he told the officers about the 4 days of rape and torture that he had endured. And he told him about how he was able to escape. The officers that got called to the scene noted that Christopher had red, swollen eyes and visible scars across his entire body.
Oh.
Bryson was then rushed to the Menora Medical Center, and two officers stayed behind to like keep surveillance
of the area.
Robert's house. Mm-hmm. So like during a later interview with the police, Christopher explained that Berdella had shown him Polaroids of other men who appeared to be dead.
Oh, shit.
And that Berdella told him that these individuals were previous individuals who he had unsuccessfully attempted to collect as sex slaves because, you know, he's the collector.
He's the collector, yeah.
So that afternoon of Bryson's escape, Berdella was arrested on the sexual assault charges.
Good.
And when the police walked through Berdella's house, they found the stuff of fucking horror movies.
Oh, shit.
So this is what they found in the upstairs bedroom where he kept his victims. Ropes attached to the posts of the bed. An electrical transformer plugged into the wall with wires leading up to the bed. A metal tray with various syringes, bottles of prescription drugs, a long iron pipe, and leather belts. Further investigation of the home led the officers to find a human skull in the closet, a partially decomposed human head in the backyard, several vertebra, like human vertebra, in a hallway. Two envelopes with human teeth inside.
Oh, no. No, no.
And 334 Polaroids and four prints of at least 20 to 30 men.
Holy shit.
In various states of torture, unconsciousness, and death. So that is why we don't know if there's only six victims.
Oh, there's got to be more. There has to be more than that.
So because this crime was so, like, horrendous and there was so much evidence and so much to go through, the Kansas City Police assembled a task force of 11 detectives and one sergeant to, like, focus on this case exclusively.
Yeah.
And during the task force discovers that Berdella had actually been considered a prime suspect in the disappearances of Jerry Howell and James Ferris, and that he had been questioned extensively by the police about these two cases, but he had denied any involvement with them and that the police had not been able to find any evidence to link him to the cases until they searched his home. In the home, they found several newspaper clippings that were regarding Jerry Howell's disappearance. And they found James Ferris's wallet with his driver's license inside.
Ooh.
So I think that's a little damning.
It's a little damning. It's a little damning.
So because they had these pieces of evidence and they were able to identify them via the Polaroids, Jerry and James were the first victims of of Roberts to be identified by their families mm-hmm. by looking at the Polaroids. So a group within the 11 police officers was tasked with finding out the identities of the remaining victims. So part of this process, I don't know why, but I found this part hilarious. Part of the process of finding out how many men there were in these Polaroids and who they were was pretty much like ruling out which ones were Robert Berdella. So they had a photo shoot pretty much.
Oh my God. With
where Robert Berdella was photographed nude in various positions and angles.
It's for science. Like,
as a comparison.
It's for science.
It's the control group. Yeah, to be able to rule him out. So I don't know why, but I just got some like weird fucking images in my head of a naked man. Anyway, so sorry.
It's for science. It's okay.
It's for science. So the next three victims to be identified using the Polaroids were Todd Stoops, Robert Sheldon, and Larry Wayne. Shortly after that, the investigators found out that Robert had paid for Larry Pearson's bail that one time.
Oh, yeah.
And that he had filed an assault report against Larry at the hospital for having bit his penis.
Yeah, that's going to come back.
So he really, like, he was not as smart as he thought, Mr. Berdella.
Like, why would... With how careful he was with torturing people, you're just going to leave all their bones around your house?
Yeah.
Nonchalantly?
And file a fucking sexual assault report?
On the person that you just murdered, and now you're going to send law enforcement looking for this guy?
Yeah.
One plus one does not... He didn't solve that. No.
He's stupid. So after this, the officers tried to interview Berdella about the things that they found. And Berdella refused to cooperate and invoked his right to silence.
Plead the fifth.
Yeah, he pled the fifth. And then, so the police tried to get writing samples from him to prove that his writing was the same as the logs that were found in the house. But once again, he refused. And this time, he was sentenced to 6 months in jail for contempt of court.
Yeah. This is a start. Good. It's a start. Yes.
It is. And it was good because during this time, the investigators, like, were able to build up their case some more. They were able to confirm the identity of the head that was found in Berdella's closet by dental records. And it was Robert Sheldon's head. And they were able to identify Mark Wallace because... two people who were his former high school classmates called into the police with tips. And then it was later confirmed by Mark Wallace's sister that it was him. So Berdella was formally charged with the murder and dismemberment of Larry Pearson on July 22nd, 1988. After they were able to confirm that the partially decomposed head in the backyard was his.
Oof.
So the following month after being charged, Berdella pled guilty to the first degree murder of Larry and was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole.
Yay!
He also submitted a guilty plea for one charge of forcible sodomy and one count of felonious restraint against Christopher Bryson. I'm trying to read my notes. At this point, it was like 1 a.m. I was like hopped up on coffee.
The delirium kind of sets in.
And so, like, so I'm like, what was I trying to write here?
What was I trying to convey?
Bear with me. So for the five remaining victims, Berdella initially pled not guilty.
Ooh.
But they threatened to pretty much say that if he pled not guilty and went to trial and lost, he would get the death penalty.
Ooh, yeah.
So in order to avoid the death penalty, Berdella worked out a plea deal to plead guilty for the rest of the five victims. He pled guilty for one first degree murder charge and four charges of second degree murder. So part of the plea bargain included that Robert confess and explain, like, in graphic detail everything he did to each victim, who he killed, and what he had done with the bodies. And Robert was literally, like, too happy to comply with this.
I don't like that. No.
Yeah, he was living for it.
I mean, because he finally had an audience, I guess, to tell all of his, you know, horrific writings.
Like, he wasn't ashamed of what he'd done, clearly. So it was, like, during this particular interview where Robert said that the movie The Collector is what was, like, the psychological, like, force driving his actions. And, like, no, you're just garbage. You can't just blame a movie.
We're not going to blame the devil music. We're not going to blame the movies. No, that's not how it works.
And also during this interview, he said the following about the people that he killed. These were not people that I thought of.
Once
I had them. Once I had them bound and was using them, they became something other than people to me.
I never
thought it out to the level of, what if one of these bodies ever gets loose? Bodies.
Oh,
that's
dehumanizing. Dehumanizing. That's
all he thought they were. Mm-hmm. Just a meat sack. So after this horrific fucking interview, the judge was like, nah, and added 5 more consecutive life sentences without any possibility of parole.
Good. Very good.
And he was sent straight off to prison. And then a few years after his conviction, Berdella was allowed to do a TV interview with the TV station KCPT. I'm guessing that's Kansas City something. PT, whatever. So in this interview, he really wanted to restore his image.
Oh, his reputation is tarnished. What's he to do?
It's tarnished. So he tried to paint the image of a sensitive citizen who simply had just made some mistakes in his life.
I made some mistakes by electrocuting this guy unconscious, maybe for over, you know.
And dismembering all of their bodies.
Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has those days.
Take a shot, we sang. He also said that he felt he had been unfairly demonized by the media. And that the reason he was even free after his first murder and that he was able to kill so many people is because of police ineptitude. So it's the police's fault.
It's the police's fault that you decided to kill strangers.
Yeah, which, like, sign me up. I'm the first to claim police ineptitude, but I don't think that was the case here.
That is not applicable in this case, Robert.
No.
Come on now.
And then little Robert goes fucking full Karen.
Oh, no.
And decided to file several complaints in written letter form.
You know how he loves to write.
Yes, claiming that the prison conditions were just unacceptable. And then he wrote several letters to a local minister.
Oh, gotta get the church. You gotta get the church involved.
Claiming that the prison officials knew that he had high blood pressure, but that they were refusing to give him his heart medication.
I mean, I do agree that some prison conditions are intolerable, but this man's just reaching for straws for sympathy.
Yeah, honestly, I think if I were one of the officers that was in charge of him, I think I also wouldn't give him his heart medication.
Like, I feel like if if I was being deprived of my medication, I don't think I would reach out to the church in regards to that manner. Yeah. I don't see the connection there. But again, this man is not very smart, as we've discussed.
And anyway, this ugly ass man died of a heart attack while serving his time at Missouri State Penitentiary on October 1992 at the age of
43. Woo! That's young. But still, yay.
Yeah. And this honestly, awful person's I'm gonna credit the police officers who didn't give this man his heart medication. I and I'm gonna give clapped. Him a little clap. I'm just gonna give him a little clap. Thank you. Thank you, officers, for not giving this man his heart medication and leading to his early demise. But
that's funny.
It's funny. I mean, it's not funny for like somebody who's not fucking terrible like Robert is.
Oh, but yeah,
Robert
but this was guy was an terrible. Absolutely fucking terrible monster.
Yeah, he was awful. So yeah, I hope I didn't bring you down too much. I tried to keep the details a little light. Like I feel like it was important to include some of the stuff.
Yes,
but
to
I
understand
go,
the severity
like,
of what he did.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, that was Robert Burdella, aka the Kansas City Butcher, aka the Collector, part two.
Maybe I should watch
and
the
now
Collector.
We close out the story. You should. Yes. We should.
We need to watch it the next time we're reunited. We're gonna have to watch and it. Feels so good. Yes, we're gonna have
we will,
to watch
we
that
will
together.
Watch it. Well, thank you all for sticking into the second part of the story. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't enjoy it too much.
Please.
Obviously. Don't let it fuel. Don't let it be the psychological fuel to you kidnapping, torturing, and dismembering six men. But I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, because
just don't enjoy it that
you,
much.
You heard what happened to Robert. It might happen to you.
You don't want to be deprived.
You don't
want to
be
medication.
Deprived. I was just about to say, you know what's going to happen? You're going to go be sent to prison. You're going to be deprived of your heart medication. And that's just the end of the line.
And the conditions are just going to be unacceptable.
They're just unacceptable. They're not inhumane. They're just unacceptable.
So I guess it's time to do a little ABCs of crime.
Woo!
Let me think. This week's episode was brought to you by the letter H for heart medication. As in,
don't commit murder, or else you'll be deprived of your heart medication.
And then you will die early at the age of 43 in the unacceptable prison conditions. And you don't want that.
You don't want that, no.
So, thank you, friends.
Thank you all.
Follow us on social media.
Yes, ms.murder_podcast, where I post pictures of the crimes, and then crime TikToks that I think are funny. I found a really
great
pun that I'm gonna post today.
Oh hell yeah.
Yes.
I'm excited. So yeah, follow us on there, send us some DMs, slide all the way into the DMs.
Case recommendations.
Not, be not shy. Yes. No. Case recommendations, wacky stories. I don't know. Tell us that you love us.
Validate
us. Boost of serotonin, validate us, all that good stuff. But all that's left to say is
good night,
friends.